Okay, Parshat Shoftim. Oh, Rami Sloan, welcome back. All right. Oh, Ezra Troy. Oh, this is fun. This is fun. All right. So here we go. So I'll tell you a story that I probably told you before, but it really, as you'll see by the end of the shiur, it's going to make the point. We had this this test called Bochan Nafcha. I'm sure I told you this story, but that's okay. It's a good story. And it was a horrible thing. In fact, my son, who is in Bad Echad now, in officer's course, just recently had this. I can't believe they still do this. Somebody somewhere is sadistic and loves the torture aspect. But what they basically do is they drop you in the middle of the desert. You do this navigation. And then they suddenly stop you. They make you put on a gas mask. And they make you run with stretchers open, which is very hard, with the gas mask on. Now, with the gas mask on, you can't breathe, right? So you're running, and it's a desert, and you're hot, and it fogs up. You can't see where you're going. It's like all sweaty, whatever. And usually what, you know, when you're in an exercise, and they make you put on a gas mask, so we're not stupid. You know, we kind of put it like this so you can breathe through your mouth. But this time, the madachim, the instructors who were with us, they were running with us. They saw that we couldn't do it. After about, I don't know, however many kilometers, we get to the foot of this mountain. Now, I guess it was too dangerous to run up this mountain with the gas mask, so they stopped us for 60 seconds. We took our gas masks off. Everybody grabbed a quick schluck, like water, and then we started running up. Now, this was called, this test had to be done. You had to finish this, and I think it was 17 minutes from the bottom of the mountain. It's a mountain, I'm telling you, it looked like this. It's like, I can't, you won't see my hand. It was like, it's unbelievable. They say, okay, you're going to get to the top. When you get to the top, there's going to be an emda. There's going to be a sergeant waiting for you in a position. You have to do what he tells you. And then you have to run down the other side. When you get down to the other side, you're going to get to a shooting range. When you get to the shooting range, they're going to give you a cartridge, right? It's going to have, I think it was 15 bullets in it, whatever. And you're going to run. And then they're going to stop at a line before the targets. And then you have to fire at the targets, okay? And you have to get a minimum of whatever it was, 5 shots into the target. If you don't get 5 shots into the target, right, you will have to do this again, and you will lose Shabbat, okay? You'll lose Shabbos. Now, there's nothing more precious to an Israeli soldier than Shabbat, right? So, like, you know, we're all freaked out, but we're going to do this, right? So we do this run, and you know, the gas mask, the whole thing. We get to the bottom of this mountain. We can't breathe. We take off our gas mask. We start running up the mountain. You know, you can't really call it running. It's more like fast walking. You just can't run up a mountain like that with your gear or whatever. And of course, you know, you start. They sent us up in group, whatever. So by the time you get up, you're alone. Like, you don't really run together. I get to the top. There's a sergeant there. He's got a Mag heavy machine gun. He says, "Okay, you have." I forget what it was, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, take this apart, put it back together, right? And it needs to be able to fire. He's watching you. Now, you've been trained how to take apart the machine gun, put it together, but you're breathing, like you can't, you know. Okay, so you take it apart, you put it together, and the whole time you're thinking you have to get going, because if you don't get down to the target within 17 minutes, you're going to have to do this whole thing again, which is the last thing you want. You run down the side of this mountain, you get to the bottom, you're hyperventilating, they give you a cartridge, you shove it in your thing. They give you the security. You're supposed to read a list of, you know, you can't point away the targets. They've got this down to a science. They read it to you in 30 seconds while you're loading your cartridge, okay? As this is going on, other men are getting to the bottom. When they have a row of like 5 guys, they say, tse. You run towards this white line, and there's a target in front of you. In fact, to make the point, the target had a big white piece of paper. It wasn't like the normal tiny target. It was a big white piece of paper on the target, like the size of a thing you would put in a printer, like, you know, this kind of size, right? Okay? It's sitting there, totally white piece of paper. And you have to run at the target, okay? And you have 5, I mean, it's like 15 yards. And you breathe a sigh of relief because firing a gun, you know, in single fire while you're running at 15 yards is no big deal. You can hit a target at 15 yards. It's a big piece of paper, right? So we don't think about it. We just pick our thing and start firing as we run. And then you get to the line and they say, stop. You have to finish all your bullets by the time you get to the 5-meter yard. If you don't, if they find a bullet left in your cartridge, you'll lose Shabbat, right? So you're determined, whatever else, you're going to finish off your bullets. So you're firing, right? You get there. And thank God my gun stopped firing. I realized I'd emptied out the cartridge. You don't know how many bullets are in the cartridge because they've given you the cartridge. And we're standing on the white line, and we did it. And I look at my watch, and I realize I made it. It was like 15 and a half or 16 minutes, whatever it is. You know, I finished the cartridges. I'm good. And I look up at the target, and my heart sinks into my knees. I can't even – I still remember the feeling because I look at this white target in front of me. It's like 10 feet from me, and it's completely empty. It's white. There was one bullet hole in the corner, which, as it turns out, was probably from somebody else's gun. Now, the reason they did this was because they wanted to teach us. And they thought that if they give us this sort of sharp example, that it's going to be clear to us. They wanted to teach us that if you're running and you're firing under pressure, you cannot hit the side of a barn. Right? You can't hit the side of a barn. You actually probably shouldn't be firing. Right? And you have to rely on others who are set. And in any good hystarut, in any good charge against the enemy, you set up a mikum retek, you set up a cover fire position, and their job is to hit the target, and they want to impress you upon this. They want to impress this upon you. You cannot hit the side of a barn when you're running. Okay, why do I tell you this story? Because there is a fascinating mitzvah in this week's parsha. You're going to like the way I stretch this. This story is going to connect. You're not going to get it right away, but okay. There is a fascinating mitzvah in this week's parsha. Beginning of Parshat Shoftim. Okay, the Shana Bekka, as we know, we just had a shiur. We talked about Lo Tikach Shochad and bribery, what that's doing here, setting judges, etc. And if you, by the way, would like to hear it, I recorded it, I could send you the link, whatever. But immediately after we have this discussion about judges, we completely change the topic, which is very bizarre, right? The parsha begins, you know, Lo Tate Mishpat, Lo Takir Panin, Lo Tikach Shochad, right? Shoftim V'shoftim Titen Lecha. You have judges, don't take a bribe. You're not supposed to lean towards one litigant to the other. And then out of the blue, right? Lo Titah Lecha Asherah, Kol Eitzel Mizbach Hashem. You can't plant trees on Har HaBayit. Because the tree was a form of idolatry. They worshipped the beauty of nature, the tree. By the way, when you stand on the roof of a Raita, and you look out, close your eyes for a minute, and your mind's eyes see Har HaBayit. And what do you see on Temple Mount on Har HaBayit? You see trees. They've planted trees there. Every one of those trees is a violation of a mitzvah d'oraita, of a nisr. You're not allowed to do that. When we, the environmentalists, are going to go nuts. Mashiach's going to come. We're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. In order to do the avodah, in order to offer up and to do what we need to do on Beit HaMikdash, on Har HaBayit, on Temple Mount, we're going to have to chop down all those trees. Right? It's a fairish in the Torah. So just get ready, okay, the environmentalists. But all right, okay? So, and then, velo takim lecha matzeva. You shall not establish for yourself a monument, not a build a matzeva. Asher saneh Hashem alokecha. Because Hashem hates a matzeva. He hates a monument, okay? You're not allowed, there's a mitzvah, you're not allowed to build a matzeva. Somebody asked me a very good question. Come on. Lo takim lecha matzeva. You're not allowed to make a matzeva. Somebody asked me a good question. Nu? Obvious question. Nu? Come on. Nobody's got a good question? You're not allowed to... Pardon?
Isn't the Beit HaMikdash a matzeva? Isn't it like a monument, sort of?
The Beit HaMikdash is not called a matzeva. It's interesting, but it's an interesting discussion whether part of the purpose of the Beit HaMikdash is so that we can have a mizbeach. Give me a better question. Come on.
What about the avot?
Dicker Rebbe gets it. What do you mean? Listen, I'll give you just, there are many examples, but I'll give you just one example. Okay? If you look in Parshat Vayetze, Yaakov is running from Esav. He gets to a special place, right? Remember, Vayifga b'makom. Okay? And what do we call that place? Anybody know what it's called? That place that he gets to?
Betel.
By the way, it's interesting. This is a whole other discussion. Rash quotes the Medrash that this is actually the Har HaBayit. This is the place of Har Moriah. And yet it's Betel. So that's an interesting question, whether there are two Betels. But I'm not going to go there right now. Right? Right? Remember, he puts these rocks in the morning. It's one rock. They all get together, right? It's so beautiful. The rocks want to come together. Vayasem otam matzeva. And he makes a matzeva. Avram built a matzeva. Yitzchak had a matzeva. That's what he did. So how could you say now that you can't build a matzeva? Not only can't you build, asher saneh Hashem alokecha. Hashem hates the matzeva. Right? We're going to have to define what that means. Right? So what do we have to do? You're not allowed to build a matzeva. What are you allowed to build? What do you do with the matzeva? Why did he build the matzeva? What did he do on the matzeva? Anybody know? There are two things you do with the matzeva. Anybody know? But they're really one thing. Anybody know? Max Weinstein, I love the background. I love it. It's unbelievable. Right? But how could you turn your back to listening to Ramatel? I'm not sure, but okay. Right? So what do you do with the matzeva? New anybody know? You offer up a carbon.
Rabbi, you have to offer chulin. We got our
chulin. Chulin in chutz laretz is like a zecher. The Ramban says any mitzvah
we're
in
chutz laretz,
any mitzvah in chutz laretz is a zecher. So it's not fair. You can taste chulin. They can't taste it. They're nebuch in galus. Right? By the way, this is a great trivia question. Which is better? To be able to go out and walk around and be everywhere in galus, or to be in bidur in isolation, stuck in a room in Yerushalayim? Obviously, if you have chulin, there's no shaila, but okay, right? So what do you do with the matzeva? You offer up a karban. And yet we can't build a matzeva, right? Now, what can we do, right? So if you look at the end of Parshat Yitro, this is fascinating, by the way. It's the first mitzvah, really, after, if you accept the view of Rashi, the Ramban, that it's all chronological, right? The first mitzvah, basically, that we have after we receive the Torah at the end of Parshat Yitro, even before Mishpatim, is, right, Mizbech Adamah Taseli, V'zavachta Alav. Right? You have a mitzvah to build Mizbech Adamah. Now, Mizbech Adamah doesn't mean that the whole Mizbech is built of Adamah. Rashi explained this because we know the Mizbech was made of stone, right? Ela, Mizbech Adamah means, I think it's here in Rashi, Mechubar Ba'Adamah. You can't build a mizbeach and hang it from a tree. You can't build a mizbeach and put it on the walls. It has to be connected to the earth. That is a discussion in and of itself. If you're curious, you ask me at the end of this year. So you have to build a mizbeach, right? You build a Beis Hamikdash, you have to have a mizbeach. There are two mizbechot, right? Mizbeach mechoshet, mizbeach zav. There's a golden altar, there's a copper altar, okay? But you're not allowed to build a matzeva. Because a matzeva Hashem hates. But you have to build a mizbeach. What do we obviously have to do?
Our
we have to define our terms. So, Rashi and the Ramban weigh in on this topic, okay? Rashi says very simple, what's a matzeva, okay? Matzevet even achat. It's one stone. Lehakriv aleha afilu l'shamayim. If you build a mizbeach, if you build an altar, but it's of one stone, right? Okay? Even if you're doing it to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Afilu l'shamayim, that you can't do. Asher saneh Hashem, Hashem hates that. So, first of all, that makes our question even greater. Because even if you're building it, even if you're setting it up to serve Hashem, you still can't do it. Why not? That's exactly what Avraham Avinu was doing. That's what Yitzchak was doing. That's what Yaakov was doing. So how come we can't do it? That's the first question. Second question is, right? By the way, every time you find the concept of Mizbeach, very often it will say Mizbeach Avanim or Mizbeach Avanim. So it would appear, according to Rashi, that the Mizbeach is many stones, and a Matzeva is one stone. You can't build an altar of one stone. That's even stranger. I would think, I would get it, like if the Torah would tell me you can't build many stones, it has to be one stone. Oh my God, I could give you the greatest year. We have to be achdus, and we have to be one, and all the evans have to come together, and we have to serve Hashem, and Hashem is the one, it'll all be about oneness, it'd be great. No, can't do that. Can't have a stone that's one stone. Has to be many stones. Why? By the way, interesting. With a mizbeach, right, what is the verb used for a mizbeach, right? It says, right, Mizbech Adama Ta'aseli. Make for me a Mizbech. Now, what would I think? What verb could I use? I could use the word Tivne, Binyan Beis HaMikdash, to build it. Right? I could say Takim Lacha Mizbech, raise up a Mizbech. It never says Takim a Mizbech, to raise up a Mizbech. It always says Takim Lacha Matzeva. And here too, it says Velo Takim Lacha Matzeva. So, you can't have a monument of one stone, according to the Rashi, and there's something about being mekim something to raise it up that may be part of the problem. Rather, you have to have many stones, and you have to make it. Lasototo. By the way, just to be sure I'm right, if you look up the Rambam, right, where would I find the halachos of building a mizbeach in the Rambam? No? Where would it find? Which sefer?
Halacha, Avodas Kochavim in Mada.
Oh, so that's actually a good guess, but that would talk about what you can't do. Where would you find the halacha? Where do you build a mizbeach? Right? Let's say you want to build a mizbeach in Tinek. You want to build a mizbeach in Tinek. Are you allowed to build a mizbeach in Tinek? Correct. You're not allowed. It's an Isser Doraisa to build. Isser Midivrei Sofrim. It's called a Bama. To build, once they built the Beis HaMikdash, building a Mizbech anywhere else, you can't do. You can't even build a Mizbech in Yerushalayim. It has to be in Har HaBayit. Okay? So, where would I find the halach of building a Mizbech then? Obviously. Sefer Avoda. And what set of halachos? Hilchot Beit HaBechira. Right? That is the set of halachot that deals with. Right. By the way, which number book? Let's see if you're really bucky here. Mada. You could take off your mute and do this. Mada. Ava.
Ava.
Zmanim. Nashim.
Nashim. Nashim. Afla'a.
Kedusha, Afla'a, and?
Mizraim.
And then? Avoda. Right, so it's the eighth book, right? Eight is Me'ala Teva, Me'ala Zman. It's not an accident. It's above nature, but okay, right? So listen to what the Rambam says, right? The Rambam starts, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Mitzvah Taseh, Lasot Bayit Lashem. There's a mitzvah to build a bayit. The Rambam goes in order. Some of you will remember in Hilchot Deot, the Rambam has a discussion, I believe it's in Perek Gimel, that a wise person, first he, you know, sort of has a profession, and then he builds a house, and then, you know, he marries a wife and fills the house. He says, only a fool first buys the possessions and then buys the house. So the Rambam is Lishitaso. He does this in order. He says, first you got to build a Beis HaMikdash. That's Halacha Aleph. And then he has a little discussion about what that means. Halacha Dalid, no, Halacha Vav, Ve'osin B'Mikdash Kelim. And you have to make, in the Beit HaMikdash, you have to make Kelim. You have to make all of the vessels for the Beis HaMikdash, right? And the first one is Mizbeach Le'ola, right? V'shar Korbanot. You have to make a Mizbeach. So the Rambam says, la'asot, you have to make a mizbeach. Why is it that the mizbeach is something you make, and the matzeva is something that you're making? Now this actually is not so difficult. Because in order to make a mizbeach, we know there's another halacha. The other halacha is, right, v'lo taseh otan gazit, that's also at the end of Parshat Yitro, you're not allowed to hew an altar. You can't take an iron tool and hew the altar, right? It has to be something. So either there was a miraculous worm called the Shamir worm. More likely, if you build a matzeva, it's much easier. Because you find a big rock. It makes sense. Like, you get a big rock. Imagine that, I don't know, you may remember that last year, 2 years ago, a rock fell off the Kotel. Did you hear this? In the southern, excavating the southern part of the Kotel of the wall, right, by the Davidson Center, a huge stone from Herod's day, like halfway up the Kotel, fell out. It was unbelievable. B'mazal, b'bracha, there was nobody there, but it fell out and it created a freak out. And they had to close off a whole area and it was all complicated. They had to bring the archaeologists and the engineers, but the Jordanians didn't want the Jews to do the whole 2 years. They still haven't fixed it, but okay, right? Now you look at this big rock, you say, okay, you know what? That's great rock. It comes from, you know, the wall that surrounded Har HaBayit. What a great thing to use for a mizbech. Right? Now, you know, if you ever bend down, do this, you know, offer up a carbon on the ground, it's hard work. But if you got it up on a big rock, then you can lay out the lamb, you can do what you need to do. That's what they used to do. So they would take a rock, and there was no building. They just found a big rock. Either they had a way to move it, or they made that the place. When you take a lot of different rocks, you got to build it. You got to put it together. So it's interesting that the language is asiya, right? Now the Ramban disagrees with Rashi. The Ramban says as follows, okay? This is in Parashat Shoftim, literally on the Pasuk. The Ramban says like this. Well, first of all, how do we know that even if you're building a matzeva, l'shem shamayim, to offer up to Hashem, that you still can't do it? So the Siftei Chachamim says, midichtiv asher sanei Hashem l'kecha, the fact that Hashem hated it, right? He says the implication is that now Hashem hates this, but originally it wasn't such a bad thing because the Avot did it. So if you would say that they're offering up for Avodah Zarah, so that Hashem always hated, that was always a problem. So therefore he says, okay, fine. So now listen to Ramban. Ramban says like this. Ramban quotes Rashi that the Matseva is one rock, and that's the problem, right? Kichok haita leKenanim. There was a custom amongst the Canaanites, right? Ve'afo pish haita uvalo bimei avot. And even though in the times of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Hashem loved the Matseva because they were offering up, right? Achshav san'a me'achar she'asu ha'elu chok l'avodah zarah. Lashon Rashi. Now, because of the Avodah Zarah, because the idolaters sort of made it their customs, now Hashem hates this. Okay. So the Ramban says, I don't understand this. Sharei ha'knanim gam b'mizbechot, gam b'matzevot ha'yu no'agim. The Knanim used matzevot, but they also used mizbechot. How do I know this? Because it says, v'nitatztem et mizbechoteihem, v'shibartem et matzevotam. Right, the pasuk in Perek Yud Bet in Dvarim, you know, last week's parsha, 2 weeks ago, right? It says that you should destroy their monuments, right, and break apart their altars. So obviously they used also mizbechot, and it also says right ki in Shmot ki et mizbechotam titotzu, and you have to destroy their mizbechot. So the Ramban wants to give a technical improvement. He says, no, it's not that they didn't use Mizbechot, it's that the Mizbeach they would do out somewhere. The Matzevot were the stones around which they built their homes, for their places of worship. So Avodah Zarah became associated with the Matzeva. Right? That's what Ramban says. All of this is very difficult. What exactly does a matseva symbolize? What's the difference, right? We have basically a number of questions here. First of all, what's the problem with a matseva, with a monument, right? What is a matseva, right? And second of all, why is mizbeach any better, right? And how does sort of the idea of one stone versus many stones, as well as the fact that the, you know, as the Ramban says, that the Kananim did this, right? So I want to suggest three possibilities, okay? And I don't think it's an accident that this parsha appears at the beginning of Elul. This parsha always appears sort of as we're going into the period leading up to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The first is to note the difference in the root of matseva and mizbeach, right? The word matseva has as its root the word yud, the letters Yud Sadi Bet, Yatsev, right? To be Nitzav, right? Okay? Vatem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem, right? That's sort of the idea of standing in place, right? When Yaakov has his dream, it says, Vinei Sulam Mutzav Artzav Rosho Magi Hashamana. The ladder is based, it's standing, it's sturdy, it's firm in the ground. I was once, we were putting up the Schach on our Sukkah, and I don't know if you ever noticed, if you have a tall ladder, so the bottom of the ladder, right, it has to be kind of like, hang on a second. If you look at the bottom of the ladder, right, so the bottom of the ladder is like, it's like slanted, okay? Now, if the slant is going the wrong way, you know, imagine that this is the ladder and there's a slant at the bottom. If you put it the wrong way, it's not very firm, right? You have to have, if a ladder is shaped like this, then you want the bottom of the ladder to be sort of at an angle. So I put the ladder backwards, and instead of it sort of being flat on the ground, it was sort of a point. And at one point I was reaching for the schach, and the ladder went out from under me. My son, Yonatan, happened to be inside looking out, coming out to me, and he sees all of a sudden the whole ladder fall backwards, the whole thing went under, right? And now the ladder's on top of me, and I'm headed for the deck. And I was like 3-4 meters up in the air. And he lets out a scream. I didn't have time to scream. Nothing I can do. By the way, if you're ever in a situation like that, do you know what you're supposed to do if you're falling down and you're going to land? Anybody know? Somehow Hashem allowed me to do this. You got to make yourself like a fish. 50% of your injury comes because you tighten up. There's a natural instinct to tighten your muscles because muscles can protect you. But if you do that, the impact is much harder. If you make yourself like a fish, they teach you that in martial arts, right? So you, and you have to slam your hands on the ground. Yeah, that's what I did. Nothing happened to me, Baruch Hashem. But the ladder has to be sturdy. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Mizbeach, on the other hand, is the exact opposite. The root of the Mizbeach is Zav. Zav, Zayin, Vav, Bet, to flow, right? It's a flowing. We live in the illusion that we are where we are. You know? I learned Torah. This is where I'm at. You know? I don't know, I weighed myself in the morning, and this is my weight. It's an illusion. Nothing in life stands still, nothing. You're either moving forwards or you're moving backwards, right? If you are, I don't know, if you saw a guy in there was a famous ballet dancer by the name of Baryshnikov, maybe you heard him. Have you heard of him? I saw him dance once, unbelievable. They made a movie, he made a movie, I forget what, Russia defecting, but there were some dance scenes in this movie. Unbelievable what this guy could do. It's worth looking it up online. It was incredible, right? Now, if you looked at Baryshnikov and he didn't practice for a week, you wouldn't notice the difference between one performance and the next. You wouldn't notice it. He was that great of an artist. But he would. He would feel the difference. If I don't bike ride for a few days, I can feel the difference. You're never standing still. So the Matseva represents that which stands still. Our avoda has to constantly be a flow. It has to recognize that we're never standing still. And more than that, it has to be an outpouring, right? It has to come from the heart. So that's the first idea, right? The idea of a Mizbeach, you know, Rav Dessler says there are three pillars on which the word stands, right? That's in Pirkei Avos. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Torah is what Hashem gives us. It comes from Shamayim and it comes down to us. We can't affect it. It can only affect us. Avodah is what we give back to Hashem. It's what we pour out. It's how we change the world. That can never be static. And the mistake, the greatest mistake the Jewish people made, the prophets, the Nevi'im, rail against this. Lama li zivchechem, right? I'm not interested in your sacrifices. I'm interested in your outpouring. Is it in the heart? You know, you can say the words every day in Davin, but if it doesn't mean anything, what's the point? So the first idea of the Matseva is that it can't be stuck, it can't be still. We have to realize where we are, what Matseva we're in. By the way, that's the modern Hebrew word Matzav. And we have to decide where we're headed. We have to flow, we have to grow. Right? That's what Elul is. Elul is a decision. I don't want to stay where I am. I want to better myself. I want to flow. I want to grow. Right? Which direction am I moving in? The idea that we can change. Right? Okay? So, first of all, that we can't stand still. And second of all, that growth has to come from an outpouring of Ratzon. Right? That's what the Mizbeach represents, the outpouring. And the second, really the third idea, right? Because the first is that we never stand still. The second is that our relationship with Hashem has to be an outpouring. It has to flow. It has to be regesh. It can't be just stuck. And the last is, what's the fundamental difference between a stone, which I find and utilize, and many stones, which I have to put together, right? What's beautiful in Judaism is the many stones, right? What's beautiful in Judaism is the fact that all the different stones come together, that we're not stuck. You know, one of the lessons that I learned from that terrible test, that Bocha Nafcha that we had to do in officer's course, was you can't depend on yourself alone. We are interdependent. We depend on each other, right? It's an illusion to believe that we can stand alone, right? You know, in World War II, one of the reasons why World War II in earnest didn't really get started until 1942. Germany took Czechoslovakia, and then they took Austria, and they took, you know, but they finally went into Poland, and that was when the English said enough. But America wasn't in the war for two very long years. One wonders what would have happened if the Japanese had not attacked America, right, on December 7th of 1941. That's more than 2 years after the Nazis took over Europe. How many hundreds of thousands, millions of Jews were murdered? And America was still not entering the war. It was unbelievable. Why? Because there was a philosophy of isolationism. It's not my problem. You know, a cancer cell, what does a cancer cell do? It basically destroys the cells around it. It eventually destroys its host. It kills itself. Right? You know how you get rid of cancer? When the person dies. The cancer dies too. So when a person looks, right, the cancer cell doesn't realize it's killing itself. Isolationism is a cancerous way of looking at the world. When we think that we can be one stone on our own, we don't get it. If you're charging up a hill, you need to understand that you have to have a cover fire position, because you have to depend on somebody else. I want to tell you, this is one of the most difficult things that you can do. I have a vivid memory of running up a hill in an ambush, and I ran out of bullets. My cartridge stopped, and I had like a second. Now, I should have remembered from that Bocha Nafcha that there was no reason to fire. You can't hit the side of a barn, right? It's not even keeping anybody's heads down. The cover fire position, they're pouring all of this, right? You set them up. You say, you know, Mimkumcha, your place is 20 meters over that way behind the rock, whatever it is. They start pouring over this fire into the terrorists. But instinctively, against everything you know intellectually, you just keep firing your bullets. The ability to put yourself in bigger hands and know that you have to rely on someone else, that's what Judaism is all about. On the one hand, we have to do our shtatas. I'm not saying that each stone isn't important. But each stone is important if it understands that it's part of a larger picture. That's the difference between a matzeva and a mizbeach. The Knanim had a completely different way of looking at the world. And Judaism says, we learn to work together. It starts as a people. It grows in the world. You know, it's exactly part of the greatest challenge of what we're going through now in this coronavirus. Because people are forced to be isolated. And so it runs the risk of promoting this isolationist tendency. But really, perhaps what Hashem wants us to learn is that we're never really alone. We need to learn to work with each other. We need to come out of this sort of with a renewed spirit, an idea that we can help each other, that we can be interdependent, that we can share with each other. And I think maybe that's part of the difference between Mizbeach and a Matzeva. There is a lot more to talk about on this topic, but that's at least sort of the beginning of a discussion. I don't want to push my envelope. So let's stop this Parsha Shir here with a good Shabbos to everybody for Parsha Choftim.